This Week in Agriculture, a production of the Red River Farm Network with your look at the markets, I'm Tyler Donaldson. U.S. military activity in Venezuela dominated headlines over the weekend, but Ag Bull Trading President Tommy Grisoff, he said he saw a limited impact on the markets.
It seems pretty quiet, Don, with the grains. Beans and corn had a little bounce last night, which was probably to be expected. They were due for a bounce, and we have a crop report coming, but when you look at Venezuela, all eyes are on oil, and you have to study what type of oil they have. They have a very heavy oil like what Canada has, but it's not like we're going to have access to that oil right away, and it's really most of that oil gets sold to China. But the biggest flyer I noticed last night was gold and silver, and the metals again had a really, really big bid.
Van On and Company's Christy Van On says traders were weighing geopolitical uncertainty against broader trade relationships.
You know, I honestly expected crude oil to be a little bit higher just off some uncertainty around the market this morning, and it is. But to a degree, you know, you just haven't seen any huge movements. We're starting to see that show up in metals right now, the buying, the Dow as well. So I do think uncertainty equals some risk premium being put in. So I think that's where it can be. The big question is, you know, is there any repercussion from any other countries? Do we see China step up and say something? And so far we haven't.
Van On says markets are likely to remain sensitive to geopolitical headlines, with traders watching for any signs of escalation that could disrupt global trade flows. U.S. grain inspections for export were mixed last week, with soybeans rising while corn and wheat fell, according to USDA. Corn inspections totaled 1.21 million metric tons, down from 1.34 million the prior week, but above last year's 877,214 tons. Soybeans increased to 980,518 tons from 773,600 the week before, while wheat inspections dropped to 183,305 tons from 318,650 tons. China led soybean purchases, Japan bought the most corn, and Mexico and the Philippines were the top wheat buyers. U.S. agricultural export sales for the week ending December 25th were disappointing overall, though not unusual for this time of year, according to Arlen Suderman of StoneX. The Agriculture Department reported wheat sales of 95,400 metric tons, corn sales of 756,400 tons, and soybean sales of 1.18 million tons. USDA reported earlier in the week another soybean purchase, with China buying 336,000 tons for the 2025-26 marketing year. That follows early week rumors that a Chinese state grain buying agency has booked 10 cargoes of U.S. soybeans from the Gulf and the Pacific Northwest. If that is realized, Chinese soybean purchases would be near 80% of the 12 million metric ton obligation with the United States. Brazil shipped a record 108.6 million metric tons of soybeans in 2025. A major shipping agency released that data. Brazilian soybean exports are up 12% from 2024. With a trade skirmish between the U.S. and China, Brazil was able to gain market share worldwide. China purchased another 132,000 tons of soybeans from the U.S. Yesterday or Thursday morning. AgMarket.net market analyst Tyler Shaw expects that business to soon shift to Brazil. Farmer selling has been light for Brazil's early harvest.
But there's no doubt they've got a big crop of beans. Weather has, you know, there really hasn't been any reason here over the last 6 weeks to get super concerned about Brazilian weather. I do think as their harvest starts picking up pace, we're going to see them step in and take over the leadership role in the export market. And let's just face it, our soybean exports have not been good for this year. So even with China coming in and buying what they have bought, we're still lagging quite a bit.
That's been your look at the markets this week in agriculture for the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson. With your look at the news this week in agriculture here on the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro was captured early Saturday morning by U.S. forces and brought to the United States to face federal criminal charges. Maduro and his wife were taken into U.S. custody and transported to New York, where they are being held ahead of initial federal appearances on narcotics and weapons charges. Senator Kevin Cramer is chair of the Senate Armed Services Air Land Subcommittee.
Well, there are clearly no half measures with President Trump, and kudos to Secretary Rubio and Secretary Hegseth, AG Bondi, and of course FBI Director Cash. Our military is clearly unmatched, and because of them and the combination of these forces and the coordination of the various agencies and the excellence of the United States, Nicolas Maduro has been taken into custody, and he's finally going to face justice right here in the United States.
Senator John Hoeven issued a statement supporting the administration's actions, saying Maduro has been charged in the U.S. for drug crimes that have harmed Americans, and describing him as the leader of a cartel that overtook a country. Hoeven praised U.S. service members and law enforcement for carrying out what he called a complex and difficult mission to improve national security. U.S. action involving Venezuela is adding another layer of uncertainty to global agricultural trade. Policy Solutions President Jay Truitt says the biggest implications may be felt through shifting trade relationships, particularly involving major commodity buyers.
I do think that the actions in Venezuela probably do, I think the wrong word is destabilize, but it probably increases the anxiety of some of the other countries in Central and South America. One of those, which is a massive competitor for us on the soybean front and on the beef front, that may be a little bit concerned about how far will the United States go to chase down narco terrorists, which, for lack of a better term, that's how they're being defined today.
Truitt says China is also closely watching developments with potential ripple effects for commodity flows and future purchasing decisions. How China responds in the weeks ahead could influence global trade patterns, especially as buyers reassess geopolitical risk alongside price and supply. New health guidelines released by the White House this week are putting an emphasis on more proteins and whole grains in a diet and less processed foods. These guidelines, which include set limits on added sugar, also raise fresh questions for U.S. sugar producers, including sugar beet growers in the Red River Valley. This is Red River Valley Sugar Beet Growers Association Executive Director Harrison Weber.
Well, you know, MAHA really aims to help Americans become healthier, you know, really by encouraging families to eat real food, you know, making at home, using from-scratch recipes. And we know that many of these, you know, real foods have been made with real sugar for hundreds of years. And, you know, really the administration has pledged that these new guidelines for Americans, you know, are going to deliver fresh, simple, you know, science-based guidelines. Instead, what we got was a 500 pages of new materials that were released that, you know, kind of reflect outdated rhetoric about added sugars and that are really anything but simple.
And FarmBridge assistant payment rates have finally been released. Those rates include soybeans at $30.88 per acre, corn at $44.36, wheat at $39.35 and barley at $20.51. The per acre rate for canola is $23.57. Sunflowers are $17.32, oats at $81.75, and lentils are $23.98. FBA payments are expected to be in farmers' bank accounts by February 28th. Growers are encouraged to use the payment rate calculator for their own farm, which is available on the USDA website. It's been a look at the news this week in agriculture for the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson.
This week in weather, I'm Tom Wick on the Red River Farm Network. 42% of U.S. winter wheat acreage is experiencing drought. There's been a steady increase in drought conditions for the winter wheat areas over the past month. According to the latest drought monitor, North Dakota is nearly drought-free. There is a small portion of clay and trail counties in eastern North Dakota considered abnormally dry. 65% of Minnesota is abnormally dry, primarily in a portion of northwest and southwest Minnesota. A small area in northeast Minnesota has severe drought. South Dakota has abnormally dry conditions across the southern portion of the state and into a portion of eastern South Dakota. According to World Weather Incorporated, there is no risk of winter kill in the U.S. hard red winter wheat or the Midwest soft wheat areas. The warmer weather has kept the winter hardiness low, making the snowfall important before any bitter cold comes in later in January. Soil temperatures support some growth in the southern plains and delta, though the dryness is limiting development. Cooling and some rain are expected later this week, but warming may return next week as soils dry. Harvest in Australia, South Africa, and Argentina has advanced well and should be winding down. Overall, the weather is unlikely to strongly affect market sentiment, though concern could rise if snow and rain fails to arrive before spring in the U.S. NDSU Extension potato agronomist Andy Robinson says this year's crop performed well, and variety trials are providing critical insights for growers navigating diverse soils and disease pressure.
Good year overall. Crop got in good timing, crop came out well. We had a little bit of heat in the fall, but we really didn't have many rain delays or big delays in the harvest. So coming into storage was nice, you know. It was probably the biggest thing was heat. It's a lot better to deal with heat than it is with some of these bacteria and diseases sometimes we have to deal with and fight.
Robinson says variety trials are key for understanding which potatoes thrive under different conditions, including drought, disease, and variable soils across North Dakota and Minnesota.
Yeah, so we recently, about a month ago, we had our red and yellow variety trial. We have conversation with our growers. I talk about them, show them the yield results. We go through and we look at them and just observe what they look like. And so we're always testing different varieties. We had about, I think it was about 25 or 26 different varieties between reds and yellows that we evaluated. And so some of them look really good. Michigan State has some interesting ones. One of them, I think, was Spartan Red. There's another one from, it's from the PVMI program out of Idaho called Becca Rose. So they look good. I think we still need to do more work on them.
Robinson adds that ongoing monitoring of diseases like potato mop top virus, powdery scab, and leaf blights remain a priority to help growers maintain strong yields and high-quality potatoes. Robinson featured at this past week's Potato Expo in Dallas. Soybean seed treatment can help protect yields against seedling diseases, but NDSU Extension soybean pathology specialist Wade Webster says that seed treatment also helps in the longer term.
They're not just going to be protecting against the soybean diseases that we have, but they also protect that plant for the entire season. Now that they don't protect from those pathogens the entire season, but the seed treatments set those plants up so that they have a healthy root system that will allow them to be resilient, especially under low moisture conditions later in that season when we get into reproductive stages.
Webster was part of the Lake Region Extension Roundup this past week. He said seed treatment is just one tool for protecting against seedling diseases. This is the Red River Farm Network.